You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about the weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain, Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Oh yeah.
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 28th of September to the 4th of October, 2020.
A whole month.
Some exceptions. But first of all, before we get to those exceptions, let's find out what Niall thought about the things he didn't get to talk about last week. So, quick rundown. I guess on the finishing things, we won't worry about the ones which are still carrying on. The end of Wacky TV Na Na Na.
As much of a non-event as I would expect from the Wacky TV boys.
It's what you want, yeah.
Yeah, that's about it. No, like any other cartoon or short novel which did that even for a joke would probably be excoriated. But just because we're used to them being this lame fly-by-night operation, and that is where the kernel or the premise of the idea really resides, then it's fine. It's good if it's better. I thought they were going to be going on longer with this chase, because maybe it's just spoiled by having such a long second season of it that I wanted more. But oh well. How bad?
How about Decadence? Yes.
Decadence. Let's see. I'm going to try and get this up really quick.
I remember what happened. Yeah.
It's kind of something, kind of the ending was spot on something that we sort of pointed out, where you have that the big final fight at the end, but then what happens afterwards? And it definitely did feel like, yes, this is like a giant system, and it made it feel like one like victory in it. And I think the system also has like has contingencies and expects this to happen.
Yeah, the system was built specifically to put bugs in, because that's part of a healthy system.
Yeah, so that's only kind of one thing, which did seem to initiate a positive change immediately, which, you know, we're actually having, you know, cyborgs and humans interacting in a non-violent capacity, unless they want to do it in the ring in Street Fighter section of this new Animal Crossing / Farmville / whatever you want it to be, kind of.
I mean, like, I'm more tempted to play this. I'm more tempted to play Decadence 2 than I was Decadence 1. You know what I mean? It's got more options.
Yeah. So it seems pretty good right now, but it's only like one step on a very long path. We've managed to create this bit of change here, but the fact of the matter is, a corporation still owns the rights to humanity, so they're only allowing you to have this. So it needs to be so much longer a fight. But it's worth fighting, because we'd get little victories like this. So important to do that. Next one.
Next one is Apari Ranman.
Just on a little kind of thematic level, you know, because it was supposed to be about cars racing across continental America, trying to outperform the trains and show the world what they can do. Then we had the ending sequence where the runaway train loaded with dynamite is going to crash into the station and blow up Chicago. So we got to put the apparatus, the car, in the way and slow it down. I managed to stop it. And the car has literally stopped the train, but also metaphorically, the car has stopped the train. It has showed up its power for what it is. And there's a new player in town. And it's awesome as well. A lot of these racers, some of them are sponsored, but others are ones that have, you know, in apparatus case, he's built this up by himself. This is a car he's just coupled together with bits you can find and generosity of people. So it's like taking some of that power away again from like the train barons who run the thing, and it's kind of giving some of it back to the people. Like, yes, like once cars become affordable, the people can like drive them around, then they have much more freedom to go where they want. They're not just tied to wherever the tracks lead them to. And it shouldn't be tied to the tracks in your mind, you know, and what you can or cannot do, including going to the moon, which we might happen at some point in the future, but we'll see. Also, it's nice that Kosame is still hanging around to able to send the letter home, so you can get on with adventures, you know, because this seemed like very obvious things. You wouldn't go home. Just go back to that again. But they also got Apare's letter, which is just read, Apare, okay. me good. Me need food.
Awesome. He's barely capable of writing, but he's a genius.
Yeah. So if they ever want to go back to this, which I hope they really would, then that would be fantastic. But we'll have to see what we get in the future.
And finally, Millionaire Detective.
Rich people advocating for what they believe is best for others, but you are so... How are you to know what happened with this? Like, Granny lays out this, like, doomsday scenario where if you let Adolium out to the world, it'll cause, like, a third, probably a fourth world war. Do you want that? It's like, what if it didn't, though? Because you can't speak for everybody. Like, what if it didn't, though? And as well, you're so detached. You operate in an entirely different realm from a lot of sections of humanity, of civilization. So how are you to... How could you even, like, relate? How could you even, like, you know, like, have any... But a perspective of just besides this one, where you're just at the top looking down. So maybe it wouldn't happen. And I think Daisuke understands that because she's been working alongside Kato and the rest of the gangs in the public crimes division, which is not even like, you know, like a real section of the real police. It's just sort of the layabouts of which where all the screw ups go to. And then they're not like millionaire Batman, Bruce Wayne types like him, but they got little things that he can do or doesn't think of because he didn't have that experience. I think he realizes that. I think the responsibility as well. Yeah, sure. Adolium, like, it'll probably could do a lot of good loss if you're going to get a lot of Adolium-based super crime, but I'll be responsible for that. And I'm going to hop in my rocket ship and fly off to from Buckingham Palace to New York and stop the Ghostbusters from returning to life of crime because... Even though their escape card had Ecto 1 on the plane.
I'd like that. Right, yeah.
They've fallen on hard times. You know, who can blame them?
In this economy, busting goals.
KG. Do, do, do. Foo, go, KG.
With Decadence, Apari Ran Man, a Millionaire Detective, I was so happy that all of them ended with basically like the super happy ending and went, sequel? It's nice to get both,
A lot of them went to an extent, damn the man.
Yeah, that's awesome. True as well. In different regards.
Then, also from last week, but Dwayne didn't talk about this at all, Fruits Basket, episode 25. I seem to have lost what it was called.
I'm different now.
That's it.
It's been like a... Nearly 2 weeks since I actually watched that now, so hope you I looked at it again.
I did rewatch it to put it fresh in my head, and I'll probably forget plenty anyway, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. I remember coming in or
we open with the kids Toru's kind of thinking for her friend Uo, who's kind of like still sad and pining after the guy, but she's like, I'm just gonna go on with life, and Toru's like, I'm looking out for you. And then we get like a flashback to her reacting to Yuki kind of returning, where he's like, oh fuck, your face is all busted in and everything. It's like, you know, barely has a tiny plaster underneath his hairline kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, hey, I stood up to her and now I'm, aren't you proud of me? And she's like, yeah, I genuinely am. That's a considerable growth for you as a character.
Aren't you proud of me, mammy? Say something nice about me. And then Momiji is there. Momiji's hey, like, I'll be praised by mammy as well.
Yeah. And Momiji's like, the plan is in. The Phoenix has taken flight. I give him the DVD. We're go for that. So there, and then it kind of cuts back to her. It's like, hopefully it'll work out for that. And then I'm trying to remember if there's any other bits in between, but we do get to see him watch the DVD and reach out towards the monitor of his old PC, going like, "Oh man, she's talking about me, but in a play." But he can't go through with it because of our dog boy suspects might be the case.
Yeah, it's what's going on at the estate. It's like, oh, Shigure, aren't you going to make up with Akito and try and calm him down? Like, all of his friends saying, no, I've been trying, man. I've been banging on the door. I'm just getting shouted out, so whatever. Anyways, Kireno's the new favorite, so whatever. We'll let him take care of it if he's so great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
Kireno rings the house after he watches the DVD to basically say to Toru, "Is like, I'm not fucking not gonna happen. Do not contact me again," kind of thing. But he gets Shigure on the phone. He's like, "Hey, fucking answer me a question. Actually, I've been thinking about this thing," and we don't get to see that until a little later, until it's basically confirmed visually. And Toru does come back from school. He's like, hey, would you go out to the shops and get me, I don't know, a pack of cigarettes or something? I forget what he asked for.
A pack of smokes for your dad.
But sends her out like just on some errands so she can meet up with your man, because he's a sneaky, sneaky plan man. And she does head out to the shops. She gets distracted by some sparrows, I think. She's like, oh, cute sparrows. And then when your man comes up to her, he's like, hey, the sparrows flew off because they were scared of you. But like, the animal form of you shouldn't be scared of you, because like cats are attracted to Kyo, that kind of thing. Yeah, which is like, sparrows aren't chickens. So
exactly. That's not a weird rooster. That's like very presumptuous. It's all birds are like that. But why are you saying it's like, do I know all birds now? What that's supposed to mean?
You think just because I speak chicken, I speak sparrow racist. But no.
Come here, check it out. I'm totally hugging you. It's like, yeah, whoa, wait a minute. If you're in the zodiac, then why are you not transmogrifying into chicken? It's like, that's right, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm not in. So his thing is, he broke the curse. He doesn't quite know how, and we're not given the conditions under which. He seemed incredibly sad, and then he wasn't even aware of it, but your stand-in for God was basically like, oh my God, you're separated from me, and felt that kind of on a visceral level, because God has a connection to all the Zodiac members, and suddenly one of them was heavily severed. And because Akito was so upset. Go on.
Yeah, I was going to say this, like, when you're kind of built up to be, you are God. You are God incarnate at the top of this. Everybody loves you. Everybody wants to like be within you and be connected to you. And to somebody who doesn't feel that way, it's just like, what? But I thought I would tell everybody love me. Everybody's supposed to love me. I'm God. I'm at the head of the table. What's happening? No, don't go. Please don't go. Please.
Yeah.
I can't not be loved by everybody.
Akito's basically reacting like, Akito, I guess, didn't really know any better. The like losing a part of oneself, that kind of thing. So in front of this crying child, he's kind of like, okay, I'll agree to stay with you forever, because maybe that can make you happy. I'm not entirely sure. Just seemingly just like this distraught child made him make this promise forever. And he says to Toru, yeah, I can't go see Uo ever again, because I made a promise to never leave Akito. And she's like, hey, how come you're crying then? He's like, oh, that's because, you know, fell in love with someone on first meeting them and I can't ever see them again. You know, it happens.
It just sort of feels like I was got out of this so easily that everybody, you know, like there are people I know, like Sugar Ray, like Rin, who are actively trying to get free of this. And I'm just kind of loose out of it. And I'm just staying here of my own volition. Because it's the best thing to do.
Well, the other thing is, if he leaves, then it's clear that they can leave, which means that everyone else will want to leave and no one else will want to be in this thing. And then Akito's just going to go completely spare, I imagine.
Yeah. Anyways, very torturous, a bird whose wings have been clipped metaphor in there.
Yeah. and then he also says, yeah, Akito, she'd be really upset. And Toru's like, wait, what? Yeah, Akito is a woman, and that's like the dun-dun-dun, I guess, kind of season finale thing.
It's not as big of a reveal as it maybe it was back when it came out.
Yeah.
For one thing, because I think a lot of it's like kind of very well kept secret anymore in the comic to begin with, but also just like, oh, okay, well, it's okay, still an absolute dick, though.
I'm still curious how they're going to handle this in the next season, because obviously part of it, and like it could be like seen as transphobic, as like that kind of thing, but more so being forced to be raised the gender that you're not, probably going to fuck you up, which is like positive about transness. So yeah, we'll see how it's handled in next season, probably.
Yeah, and I dig it as well. It lines things up, because now Toru is thinking, okay, and if I need to break this curse, I may need to like learn out more about Akito and try and understand where she is coming from. Mm-hmm. So a young woman with abandonment issues, wonder if I heard that before. Maybe we could find something we could have got in common here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. So it's kind of cool. Like this, it seems to be like, I'd say more so than the kind of Akito thing. It's like, yeah, there is a way to get out of this. So it's like, this is like a clue, with a kind of very tantalizing clue. Like somebody has gotten out of it. We just need to see how all these jigsaw pieces fit together. And
yeah.
I'd be able to get out of Vialis. But do we want to do it either? Because as you've seen from Carreno, it seems to be a very traumatic event for all involved. So is this the best option to take either?
Yeah, yeah. Because obviously he's taken the option of promising to stick around anyway, despite the fact that he has an out.
Yeah. All right. It'll be a very chilly winter for them indeed, but very beautiful. Again, it's very good, as we said, at having this conveying the seasons and their unique little beautiful things they got going on. Even like in the cold winter, there's a lot of beauty to be had. And lots of nice hot steamy baths as you peer out onto your from the veranda of your mansion. But cool nonetheless. You know, it's getting kind of colder here again, so you know, just a nice little cozy shots in here.
Yeah, even with this being like set in New Year's, it's like we're kind of coming into the same around level, but
it
feel right for sure.
Is it back in the spring or the summer next year? I forget.
Crap, they did announce it. No, I bloody well
forgot. I think it was the spring, if I recall correctly. So yes,
okay, not too long then.
Yeah, because it has to be like therefore like the. The kids like that or last term of school as well before they graduate.
Yeah, they're coming into the new year of their last year of high school.
Then we've got Extra Olympia Kyklos, episode 19, Herma, of which has very little bearing on the actual plot as the songs get further and further away from the story. The actual plot of this episode is basically a long meta gag about how the one thing they can't do in this show about the Olympics is draw the Olympic symbol.
Your man's reaction to like that's looking a little too close to copyright infringement, and then it just goes like it cuts before he finishes it. I was just like, oh, that's fucking.
And when he draws four circles, and the mayor's like, I think you need to draw some more circle, and then it ends up with like 40 odd circles,
like every individual like province represented. And it's like, this looks like nothing. And the mayor's like, it's freaking me out looking at it.
And then he accidentally draws the Sicily flag as where they're trying to...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good flag.
It is a good flag.
Right, but
so like, that looks very familiar. Well, depend on you.
It also like it appealed to me from like a graphic design background. It was like, don't have your client there while you're doing it. You will just end up with like the worst shit.
Dear.
And just the where it's like, oh, this is nice and simple. It's like, yeah, but if we add a few more bits, yeah, good idea. And then they add so much, it's just, it's terrible. It's bad again.
Yeah. This looks something out of Lesser Key of Solomon. One of those demons with the multiple limbs and legs and stuff.
But then, thanks to a handy bit of slapstick on the bear's part, we end up with a perfect design.
Yeah, no, it's pretty solid. Sometimes the accidental one is the best one. Also, I did like the way the those waves were animated. Like, I think it was like fabric over each other.
The sheets, yeah.
That was quite nice. So, because obviously they needed to do it for a big fucking wave coming in.
The designs are literally being drawn in sand.
Yeah, that was nice as well. I think they're using... it's like that sand that you have kids do, because it was definitely like more tactile.
Yeah, but holds its consistency.
Yeah, these guys could like even molding the mayor's like greedy fucking slightly handsomer face in sand. I was just like, he's pretty good at fucking at art, this guy.
Just never appreciated. It's just because it doesn't make any money, does it?
Mm-mm.
It was like as well. It was like this is the episode where what didn't involve. And he jumped to 1964 Tokyo either. It was just, nope, we're just going to be on the beach. Just
no, the mayor is fully aware that he goes to some other fucking foreign land and gets cool ideas while they're talking about mascots and shit.
Yeah. a 10-meter tall statue made out of ivory? Haven't they heard of the Washington Convention in Athens? Not that I have either.
Yes.
That's a good joke, yeah, yeah.
And then our song is an explanation of what a herma is.
So good. So fucking good. Like, last week's song was okay, but this song, I was just like, yes.
Okay. So say you've got a stone pillar, but it's just standing out by itself. That's not, it's not a pillar, my man. That is a herma. And say again, what if it was had a face card onto it? It's not a statue, though. This is a herma. And say just for one last final detail, or if there was some, say, genitalia carved in the bottom of this, like very
Oh, well, it hasn't been finished yet. I understand. It's like, no,
nope,
that's it.
That's all we need. This is the Herma. It is the sculpture of manliness, of masculinity.
I like
if you
the
break,
little,
the penalty is death.
Yeah, I like the little side note. I was like, this guy broke all the Hermas in Athens.
Well,
got in a lot of trouble.
Let's be strict.
Allegedly,
his enemies accused him of breaking all the Herma.
Yeah. I'm going to blame him.
That guy's Wikipedia page is great because it's clear from his historical. The description of his history is that he must have been a massive asshole.
Asshole or a really nice guy with a lot of asshole enemies and the ability to write the fucking history books. That's the other thing. Like,
well, no, it's the fact that he keeps on switching sides and does really well for the side he switches to.
That's why everyone
and then eventually
him.
Has to leave that side as well. Like, despite winning loads of battles through his strategies for whatever side he's gone to, he somehow ends up with powerful enemies on those sides. Which does suggest that you might be an asshole.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, once it might be just assholes being assholes to you, but repeatedly.
Once is bad luck, but repeatedly that's you doing it, yeah.
The pattern.
Yeah, though I think his death is fairly ignominious as well. Oh yes, he was... there's various tales of it, but... Yeah, he rushed out towards his assassins as his house was on fire.
They smoked him out of the place? Okay.
Then we've got God of High School, Season 1, Final Episode, Episode 13. God/God.
Should have just gone God and Dog. It was sitting right there.
But there's no dogs here.
I mean, like, it's a monkey, so...
It's a monkey,
yeah.
Yes. So I do like how we get the... Jin's getting these mysterious memories of things which he didn't seem to... He can't remember. Like, is him as, like, some sort of... Is he being worshipped? Is he the leader of a cult? You get all these little clues, and you think, well, in another show, this would be passed out over multiple episodes, but, like, halfway through the episode, it's literally just written on the screen for you. The Monkey King!
God, insert Gareth Marenghi.jpg in there. It's like, we get it. We fucking get it. Jesus H.
Subtext is for cowards.
Yes. All right. That being said, this I think it was my favourite episode of the entire series, to the point where I was like, after multiple weeks saying, I don't think I want to watch any more God of High School, after this episode, I was like, yeah, I'll probably watch God of High School when it comes back.
Well, the fights are all right. I mean, I'm not going to deny it was fun seeing him just like rocket Jake Al off the end of that extending pole in the eyeball, and it's just like I was sort of getting launched in the sky, and the enemy is running up the top of it and just punching him. This is for my friends, pow, pow, pow. That's
I noticed
right.
That he like this is for this friend, this is for this other person, this is for this other person whose name I don't know, but I know you fucked up. And as for that guy who lost his arm, I don't know his name, so you get off for him, basically. Poor guy didn't even get to do a fight because of all the rushing through the thing. I mean, like, you can say a lot of negative about this show, but one of the positives is it's certainly not unentertaining. You know what I mean? It definitely, like, has something in it that makes you go like, oh, okay, that was weird or cool or confusing, and I'm interested in watching.
Yeah, and I think, I actually think it's good to make it clear that he is literally the Monkey King. And it's, they make the point of, like, everybody else is borrowing powers from the gods. He is literally a god. He just doesn't remember that he is. And then at the very end...
So the Monkey King was turned into a baby boy and then raised by some crazy taekwondo master.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yes. The acupuncture guy is, like, wondering, like, what crazy thing did you raise?
Yeah.
And there's other nice little touches, like when he takes his final form after he's lost the key power, and like the grandson seems to turn his power against him while he's still absorbed into the body, was a nice touch. And then the other thing which made me like, oh, maybe I do want some more, is Romy Park showing up right at the end with apparently the woman who is the progenitor of the human race.
Who kind of shows up as like, all right, so you finished the God of High School. What's your wish?
Hold
I'm
on,
the,
hold
I'm
on.
The irritable Shenlong of this.
You're the,
so.
You're the origin of all creation. Back up a minute. No. I got woken up two weeks early for this shit. So you're going to get take away, Shenlong. I'm going to go back to bed, all right?
Like, yeah, the Bruce Lee suit wearing one, like, stumbled upon her in situations like, what was even happening there? I don't know. It's been fucking some,
I see where it's all transported.
Been shortened so much.
When they were transported into the heavenly realm or whatever they were sent to.
She probably
stumbled into that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and then she uses her power to... The wish is basically undo the damage that Jaegal did. But only to,
with the one exception of she can't bring people back from the
dead. Yeah.
Mm.
And then using that power turns her into a small baby, but who is still really powerful.
It is before God, after all.
I feel like they kind of missed the joke of her turning into a small baby by making everyone else chibi in those scenes.
That is true, yes.
You're so small. You're just the same size.
Yeah.
I
like the chibi look, but I'm just like, it's like, you need the contrast then. Have her be the chibi and her interacting with the regularly sized characters for comedic effect.
Yeah. Oh. Everyone is fine, but Soul is still a crater.
Yeah,
I think if you phrase that wish a little better, you could have gotten a lot more bang for your buck, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, all he was going to do originally was just bring my grandfather to me, and then he had to look at everyone's wounds and realized,
that'd be a dick move. Also, you know your grandfather's lost his arm, so how about you repair all the damage that was caused inadvertently by parties related to God of High School? And that way his granddad would get his arm back.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And it'd fix Soul. It'd just, everything would be fixed. It'd be grand. Except for anyone who died.
Yeah.
But then Park Moon-jin and I wouldn't be able to get all the rebuilding contracts.
Yes. It'd become,
that'll get him elected in the next one. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
It'd become the leader of the country, as that appears to be the plot of the next one.
It wasn't
the
clear.
President of High School.
It wasn't 100% clear to me, but you remember when he was turning into a giant monster and all the dudes he'd eaten were popping out of him as other weird slime versions of him, the shark tooth guy? Was the guy who caused him to lose in the end, the wizard's, Zeppeli wizard's grandson?
Yes.
Like, was he casting a spell from his flesh monster form?
Something
okay,
like
I was, I was like, is that what's happening here? Because all you've shown is like, this flesh monster, and I was like, is that guy? I barely remember what he looked like. And then the grandfather smiling, and I was like, I guess?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, that was allow that kick to get through. And Because at that point, he was like, oh, okay, use my monkey powers. They're not responding. So I assume, I don't believe the Robie Park character is a god. I believe she's just a very, 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 very old woman.
Hmm.
Who apparently gave birth to the first humans somehow.
And also that one-armed drunk guy was trying to hook up with.
Yes, I did like that bit of teasing him.
Oh, the fact that they're brothers as well, that was very brotherly. Yeah, that was quite good.
Hey, it's your girlfriend.
Shut up, turn it down. I'm still salty about that. Dear.
Yeah, so that it was. It's like watching a bad pay-per-view but with a good main event. You come away thinking, yeah, I'll come back and watch that again next time.
It'll be a rich vein for me to tap if you're in the business of clipping fight scenes and showing them well at places to other people. Then yeah, there's plenty of that there, so that'd be good. So,
you want to see a Monkey King beat the shit out of some giants and then like really messing up an angel. This is good.
Yeah. they're not going to find anything deep in here. There's nothing. It's junk food. It's junk food. This is your fun nachos, but
nothing wrong with good junk food.
It tastes all right in the moment.
Now its premise is out the bag. Its premise is out the bag. It can do away with the pretense that it's a martial arts tournament anime or comic.
I did like the martial arts stuff, but I feel like a lot of people are going to be like, I'm not fucking coming back to this. You promised me a martial arts tournament, but then you went fucking crazy.
Yes, whereas I'm
whereas
like,
it was like,
I want the crazy.
It was like, I want to get to the crazy. Crazy is what it was trying to achieve. But yeah, it kind of just tricked or drew people in with promise of, I'm not going to call them realistic fights, but like fight choreography, I guess.
Yeah, it was like mixing styles against each other, and now it's become a big grand, like, the styles are still there, but now they've got loads of visual metaphor and literal summons of historical and mythological
the
figures.
The amount of fucking Lu Bu showing up in this was very appreciative as well. Just yeah. fucking, it's like, I'm just here on my horse while you do other shit. Is that cool? dear.
Then we've got Hypnosis Mike, Division Rap Battle, Rhyme Anima, Episode 1. As soon as a man is born, he begins to die. And as soon as a man watches this anime, he begins to wonder when he's going to switch it off, which was about 10 minutes for me.
Yeah. It was all I had on my lunch break. I skimmed through it anyway.
It opens strong. I think everything before the opening credits is a great, like, drop you into a crazy premise, which is women have taken over the world, they've destroyed all weapons because men can't be trusted, and instead they're giving men microphones which allow them to hypnotize each other into seeing weapons so they can't actually do any real damage.
It's like words okay. hurt, man.
You had me as really interesting words. Up until that fucking madness. All right.
It's, yeah, it's... very much like, okay, we're going to like settle this with our words, not with a kind of structured debate or anything.
Not
like
come
that.
To a compromise.
Use our words,
no,
which,
no.
You go yes. through this device, which magically amplify them and cause them to create illusions where people believe they're being punched or being like assaulted by giant speakers.
So literal battle rap, and then the theme tune plays, and it's fine, and then it betrays its what it's actually doing. As the rapping kind of disappears, and it becomes like a boy band crew at the end.
Yeah, it is some weak flow, man.
It is the pro- and then as you're getting these other, I got to the second rap battle and then I switched it off. The first rap battle is like a bunch of, I don't know if they are brothers or they're just calling each other's brothers because they're in a gang, but they've all got like what's the different coloured eye condition.
Also, some of like the women in parliament who rule over the country are also like that as well. Is that some kind of thing in the future now? I don't know.
And the problem is they're going up against like just guys, and then they do the rap battle and they become stiff CGI. And I was like, okay. And then the second one. There's like an army guy and some other, and then I switched it off. Because the rapping's bad. It's bad rapping. They should have hired rappers and got them to act and not hired actors and got them to rap.
But the part thing is, Brian, you know, this is a multimedia franchise, yes. Which is, you know, if you peer into a close enough of one scene, this is basically just going to like create an Otome game, if not an Otome kind of franchise. Yes. So the point is not the music or the songs that are premise. The point is how many of these lovely
the
boys you want to see spit sick rhymes.
And then go buy their CDs, and there'll be individual CDs for each different group, and it's a shame because it could be better.
But it's fine. Yeah,
it's a good weird concept.
That's fine. In fact, there's plenty of weird concepts, and it's open to it. But it's a shame. It couldn't be an Otome franchise, and also a decent rap album as well. But yeah, well, they couldn't devote equal attention to both.
Thankfully, that was the only thing which disappointed me this week, because then we got Jujutsu Kaisen Episode 1, Ryumen Sukuna.
Oh. Looking forward to this. It was just what I needed.
In which we get the first chapter of the manga with, was there some other stuff thrown in to like wrap around it?
I think, I probably should look at the first chapter, but when you have Yuji chained up in a room and Satoru Gojo was just like, hey buddy, you're going to be executed.
Whoa, like opening with that.
I think that was at the start of chapter 2, maybe.
I think it is. Yeah, because I'm looking at chapter 1 now. The chapter 1 opens with your fella looking in the thermometer shed and finding it empty. But the other good thing is that's just like a single page, whereas in the anime, that sequence is funny. It's
yeah,
funnier
no,
than
it's
it actually is on the page.
In a good way. It does a lot of stuff like that where they're doing... like exposition dialogue and stuff, and then you're seeing the dogs just going nom, 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 eating something. I'm just like,
oh, those dogs' faces were so great.
They've added like lengthened scenes where he's ringing up. It's like, yeah, it's not fucking there. No, it's not. I checked, and he opens it and closes it again, kind of thing. It's like they add stuff to lengthen it, which would generally be filler, and they add stuff in the background for stuff where it's less interesting things are happening.
Yeah,
but to make all of it fucking better,
the background
very well
gags
done.
Are really good. I really want to try this. When Yuji is challenged by the PE teacher, is like, okay, if you want to keep the alcohol club open, you want to find best B in a game of athleticism, and like, check us out, shot put. Like so many meters, what you got? Like the world record is this amount?
Yeah, he was like a few like inches, I think, away from the world record.
Okay, so can I throw it any way I want, whatever way you want, kid. He just fucking lobs us.
He lobs it like a baseball.
He pitches it like a baseball and throws it. That's like three times the world record. Okay, and the PE teachers are shocked, and it's like while they're chatting away afterwards, they're just like. He's like frozen in a stunned pose, and all the rest of the kids are like piling things on top of him.
Piling things on top of him, taking selfies beside him. Like it's good stuff. Yeah.
He keeps it running away in the background, and it's. I know there's always like that busyness is in like the comic panels as well, where it does. We're a fan of the layouts. I mean, and they get even better as the comic goes on. It's just like just the way it will change. Almost change tone or even style from it like midway through a conversation for this one panel because it just looks good on the page and it's kind of funnier and it keeps the like this discussion of the lore about who Yomensuke and the most evil demon ever was and it keeps it flowing on through. Don't worry about it. It's really nice.
I think he does an even better job than the comic does of the red herring of the setup of what you think the story is going to be of like this occult club and.
It's the occult club, and they're obviously going to get heavily involved in actual occult stuff. It's like, even our main character, like he's only in the occult club so he can fuck off home early. He doesn't actually have to go to the club.
Yeah, because he is looking after his granddad who is like laid up in the hospital. I think he's, you know, this is where he's going to live out the rest of his life, which is not for very long, unfortunately. Mm.
I did like the interplay with the grandpa and himself and the nurses as well. It felt like actual people that they were dealing with day to day. Like they probably know. It felt like he knew the nurses by name, that kind of way.
It's important to set that up because this is going to be it's going to be a story about a lot of like ghouls and monsters who are going to be like killing people or people are dying or some of these monsters are born from bad feelings as a result of people dying, lingering regrets so spirits can't pass on, etc., etc. So having this philosophy, this approach to what death actually means to an everyday person and that impact it has on them because like his granddad passes away, kind of just mid-conversation, just giving him some advice, you're a strong kid, Yuji, you know, try and help people out, even as many people as you can, however few you can.
Doesn't matter if they thank you, just if you can help one, that's fucking fantastic. Go on.
As I was going to say, this is a very everyday manner, a very ordinary manner in which he packs up his granddad's belongings and he just signs the hospital paperwork. In the comic, I felt like it had been like a little time had passed between these things. It had been a couple of days, but it all happened in the same evening. Apparently, his grandfather has just died. He gets pulled into this extraordinary story then.
And that kind of makes it, the fact that it happens in the same afternoon kind of makes it more realistic. It's just like, just life and death happens. This shit fucking goes down. That really worked for me. Some of the restructuring of the chapter I thought worked very well. Again, initially thinking what the occult society is about, where they're like, the guy coming in is like, hey, you guys have to like do club activities to remain a club. And they're like, we got a report on the haunted rugby pitch. Yeah, these big, strong rugby guys all getting sick. A bit weird, wouldn't you say? It's haunted by the ghost of a guy who got killed by the mafia. And it's like, actually, it was ticks. Y'all got bit by the same ticks. It's pretty bad, but they'll be okay. And then it's like, but then they set up that ghost, and then your man's like, Jesus, this rugby pitch is haunted as fuck. And then later on, that monster shows up. And I was just like, oh, that's fucking nice. It never like jumped out at you. That's been working away, tipping away as you were watching it, which is, I thought that was very well done.
And the explanation of why this cursed finger they've discovered that he'd been sent to recover was here, was to, it was like a deterrent for other curses.
Yeah. It's like if other curses can smell this really strong curse, they'd be like, whoa, not going near there. So it'll keep bad things from happening there. but that power sort of seeps in, and then it attracts things. It does the opposite fucking thing.
It's the ward around the finger itself is breaking down over time. It's also why you shouldn't be able to remove that, but it's so aged and decaying now that even as an everyday person, like these two kids in the alcohol company, peel that away. And
just they're picking at it like a bit of sellotape.
Now it just attracts them like flies to shit, so to speak.
And they think they defeat. They think they've saved the rest of the club, and they think they've defeated the curse. But then another one shows up and knocks your sorcerer out. And so, in order to defeat it, he has to eat the finger because he's.
Well, as your man was saying, it's like the demons want to eat it, and he's like, "Why is it tasty?" He's like, "No, it's not fucking. No, it's because it's evil. It gives you fucking spirit power. That's why they want to eat it." And he's like, "So if I eat this finger, I'll get spirit power and I can beat the shit out of this thing." Because he was doing a pretty good job out of the fact that if you don't have spirit power, you can't actually kill them. You can just damage them temporarily and then they'll instantly heal.
Mm. He's kind of going, "Oh, well, if I gotta eat it, that's so gross." Oops, and I guess possessed.
It works out up until the point where he's possessed by an evil demon and the evil demon's like, "Now I shall destroy humanity." He's like, "Hey, buddy, I'm still here. You're still in my body." Which was, again, I did like the camera back and forth, the classic kind of thing.
But... I'm looking at the comic. The what they did with the action in that sequence is much better. Of like,
yeah.
Of like the finger hanging out the side of his mouth at one point as he's building up to him shoving it down his throat, and he's in a lot more peril in the anime than he is.
It's more extreme. Like it been swung around and everything.
What I was just talking about, how good God Heist was action wise, is the same director in the same studio. Probably been put to work on maybe a more coherent story that has got a bit more to it than just cool action scenes.
And it'll be less compressed, I imagine. So that'll work to its benefit.
Yeah, just hope they aren't going to overdo it as well, because like Sung Woo Park, he's a very dedicated dude, but everybody who works with them, they're only human, so hope they aren't taking too much onto themselves.
I saw people commented about Mappa's behaviour on Twitter today.
Oh, but they took on Attack on Titan last season, even though they really shouldn't have, because they were already stretched for anything.
Oh dear.
And with studios, we don't want to do it again. Why not? Because Jesus, we just fucking don't want it. Also, we got the Great Pretender going on, so we're okay for a little bit.
They got something for Netflix as well. Vampire in the Garden. That should be a period. They should get more news about that sometime, because that was the thing. That was one of the two other things currently we don't know much about, but as well as Spriggan, but now we know more about Spriggan, so I'm sure we'll find out more about Vampire in the Garden and Mark Miller's is it Super Criminals?
Super Criminals.
Bones. That's Bones animating that. So I apparently found that out in December. Because this is the big Miller World deal with Netflix, of which we've seen nothing. I don't think.
Okay. This maybe sings something. This maybe like something that I. Maybe something that.
You might have scrubbed it from your brain.
Super Crooks.
Super Crooks, that's it, yeah.
Okay.
I've heard nothing about that.
So this is the screenwriter who did. This is Hiroshi Seko, Aijin, Attacking Titan.
You like him?
Doro Hadoro, Mob Psycho, Vinland Saga, all that jazz.
All right. Well, that Mark Miller, I would be hesitant, but Hiroshi Seko is like maybe.
Going, I'm talking about who's writing Jujutsu Kaisen. I'm saying about Super Crux is we have no fucking idea who's working on that.
Oh,
except it's with Bones.
I thought you were saying he was doing that as well.
No. I mean, we can
hope so. He's great.
I kind of hope it's they get the Concrete Revolution guys to do it. I know who I don't want to do it is your fella who did that thing with Stan Lee.
Which one?
Roshinaga
Pama. That's the font one. Yeah, the one where the only good thing about it was the opening theme, the recurring song by Trevor Horn.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was thinking of Hero Man. Fuck's sake. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hero
Man. I still have that song on my playlist.
Yeah, same here.
It's good. It's good. It's a good song.
It's the best thing it gives. Anyway, moving on to With a Dog and a Cat. Every Day is Fun. Episode 1. So short, doesn't even get titles.
It's
this
too
is
long to say a title.
About a minute and a half, maybe a minute and 25 seconds once you click the
two
opening
episodes?
Credits. Two stories, yes. Mm. I think they both. This may have just been the trailer again. I know one of them was the trailer. Mm. The first story.
It's that short a show, yeah.
Is the dog wants to eat its owner's
crisps.
Yeah. And the owner's like, "Ha, oh, you silly dog! You don't even know what they taste like. You just keep and you keep on asking, even though I will never give you them." And then she's realized, oh no, he just thinks eventually he'll get them. And then the cat's like, "You stupid animal, just take the food when she's not looking."
Take it while she sleeps.
And then that cat that fucking appears in, I hope that happens every time.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
That really tickled me.
Because the cat
answered the door.
The cat exists in both anime form and cat form.
I mean, like, based on the coloring of the cat's face, I'm guessing, like, that's the real cat, though, isn't it?
I think so. I'm guessing the woman who writes this comic also
probably
owns these two animals.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And then the second story is that the dogs had a terrible haircut.
Stupid groomer haircut, yeah.
And everyone finds it hilarious, but the dog, being a dog, just thinks they're having a great old time making everybody happy. And then comes and shows the cat, and the cat does not recognize the dog because it's had a haircut and
just
hits
whaps
it.
Its face. Yeah. Like, this is a good show, but if you like cats, it's the stereotypical dogs are great, cats are pricks.
Yes, but the cat isn't a prick in the way that people who like cats because they're this sort of pricks, I feel.
Right. If it's trying to, like, get down cat behavior and making it sound prickish, because the cat's just like, what the fuck, I don't know this dog.
Yes.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
I feel like people who like cats tend to be, many of them are attracted to them because they have those personalities.
Because they're tsundere.
Yes.
could be.
It's also really well animated.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they can compress that budget into a very short time. So that works out.
Yeah, this was exactly what I was expecting, mainly because half of it was the trailer.
That's definitely delivering, yeah.
Can't get much more truth in advertising than that, where the advert's 50% of the episode. I don't know how many episodes it's going to run for. As it's this short, I could see it going an entire year, maybe. But having said that, we've watched things this short, and they've only gone 13 episodes.
It's hard to fucking know.
Machiri Neko.
Depends how much, comic exists.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. And how long these strips are in the comic for each story. Thumbs up for this.
Easy. I mean, it's not even like 2 minutes, like if you didn't have an hour. Two minutes is too long.
Yeah.
A minute and a half. That's just silver bullet right there every time.
Eventually, we're going to get back to Vine length anime, are we?
maybe
seconds.
People complain they haven't got time to watch it. Oh, things are too long.
Yeah.
Can't watch all that One Piece. Well, for One Piece, every episode was a minute and a half long.
Well, sometimes it feels like there's that amount of new content in the episode.
Yeah.
Then, Detective Conan, episode 983. Kid versus Komei. The Targeted Lips, Part 1.
Is that a mistranslation? What is up with that?
It may be. I know there's definitely missing punctuation. Because on the Crunchyroll, it's like Kid versus Komei, the Targeted Lips. There surely should be an exclamation mark after Komei.
Yeah.
It sounds very leaden because the like, targeted seems to. I don't know. I don't know what they mean, but you know, they're like objective. Maybe I think is what they kind of mean there. But targeted is the
There's a pearl in it called the Fairy's Lips, I think.
Yeah, the Ark has been.
And obviously, there's a Master Thief trying to get it, so it is being there is lips being targeted. But I'm just like, that's.
And
really
also, it has
a
double meaning because there's other lips being targeted as well, literally.
Yes, yes, yeah. I mean, like, I get where they're going with it. Yeah, because your man's just like, it's weird because it'd be like, I really want to kiss my girlfriend. Yeah, fair enough. But it's like, I want to kiss my girlfriend because my friend kissed his girlfriend first. Ooh, yes. That bastard. I'm going to kiss her right in the lips. Well, I'm looking at her lips
shit
right
out
now.
Of her.
There's another issue in that there are now however many episodes Heiji Hattori has been in this show. I don't believe that the pair of them have recognized each other as boyfriend and girlfriend yet.
Really?
Because the way Kazuha responds to everything he says... It doesn't feel like they're from her point of view that they're a couple. They're just friends hanging out.
Yeah, I guess
because he's worried as we may remember from 18 months ago. he's worried about is it the swordsman character who looks exactly like Shinichi. Being interested in her, I think.
Yeah, because he wants to look cool in front of his girlfriend. He wants to do like a romantic gesture at a romantic place, like his friend did. He wants to do everything his friend did, but on a different girl with him.
He is, yes. Kaito Kid and the Fairy's Lip is what this was called, apparently, in the comic.
That makes more sense. Again, you could be the Fairy's Lips is the fair maiden he wants to kiss or something. Yes. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, my first note was Heiji is mad at Shinichi for kissing Ran when he hasn't kissed his girlfriend. We got Sonoko's grandfather in this one, who is basically, he's borrowed this ring to display as a way to lure Kaito Kid into a trap.
I think he fancies Kaito Kid. Just try and steal a Kaito Kid. I'm going to take out a newspaper ad. Ooh, that sensual bastard. I'm going to get him. Like everything he says is an insult. There is also a compliment there. I don't think he says sensual, but basically. And I was just like, all right, buddy, whatever floats your boat.
Them is devastating good looks.
It's nearly a line like that. Yeah, yeah.
He basically wants he's super rich, but he also wants the acclaim that will come as being the man who caught the Kaito Kid.
Yeah, the prestige of beating the Master Thief.
And so he's brought a bunch of detectives in to see whether they think that this trap he's going to lay is suitable. And so he's brought in Kogoro. He's brought in Heiji Hattori. He's brought in the cop from the Kaito Kid comics, who seems very bored until he gets to the point about catching Kaito Kid and then he really perks up. And then they bring in the guy whose nickname's Kobe, the guy from Nagano, who basically looks and sounds like Zuge Liang from Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
It's your man with the really nice mustache, right?
Yeah, the guy.
Okay, because I was thinking every time it shows that guy, there's like sexy saxophone music playing and everything. And I was like, what are you fucking suggesting with this character? It's a strange, horny. It's a strangely horny show. Yeah,
it is. Quick reminder of who this guy is and how he's got two friends. One of who's also another cop who doesn't have an eye, but for some reason isn't a suspect in the room. I think it's because of.
Has he been exonerated somehow?
I think he's got other things which don't make him fit into the description of Rum. He's got he's got other disabilities beyond the missing eye. Okay. If I remember correctly, I think he has to walk on a crutch all the time.
That could be a fake crutch, though.
It could, but I don't think so. I think he's not. Then we get introduced to the two characters who are clearly the people this story is actually about. Mm. The gemstone broker.
Well, I mean, like, they get named and aged.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a clear sign. It's like, okay, one of these motherfuckers is going to be dead or something's going on with them. Yeah.
Or has done some sort of crime. The crime is immediately suggested that the gemstone broker who's given the ring to...
He says he found it, like, while doing diving and it's really nice. And I thought it was really good.
Yeah, it's a pearl, isn't it? It's like a...
And he's like, okay, I'll lend it to you. But if it does get stolen, then I'll still get fucking paid. Because he's given it on loan to this rich guy in his museum.
Yeah.
So win-win for him. He gets paid out of it.
Yeah, so that's the... And then a woman shows up who claims that the ring is actually hers.
And that it was like her mother's betrothal ring or something?
Yeah, and she'd given it to the gemstone broker for evaluation, and then he switched it with a fake.
Yeah, and her mother's getting buried tomorrow, and she wants to bury her mother with the ring, so it's of vital importance I get that ring back right now.
Meanwhile, to the viewer, it's clear that Kid is one of the policemen who are guarding the ring at the moment.
Yeah. Because, like, we get internal monologue and everyone's like, yes, my plan's going very well.
He's like, he's like, I can't do it now because there's too many people around, but I could at least do a test run today. And then he leaves a calling card by...
he flicks like a little ball in the corner. Yes. He's like, Inspector, there's a weird ball over there in the corner. And your man's like, is there a fucking... I'll go check. And then as he leans down to check the ball, Inspector, there's a calling card on the bottom of your shoe.
Yes.
It's like, I will steal the gem at midnight tonight. And then as they're kind of looking around, it's like, actually, there's calling cards everywhere. Yes. Like, here's one for 8 o'clock. Here's one saying, I'm not going to bother today. So he just
left
all these around.
Yeah, and Kobe's like, well, I think the cop who just told you to look for that ball is Kaito Kid.
That seems pretty likely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he has to think of a way to get out of there. And then he's going to... something goes off and... Oh, they're going to display it in ice. That's the other thing they're going to do.
So the idea is like it's displayed in a solid block of ice. So if you had to melt through it, it'd take a while because it is actually cooled in the room. If you had to drill through it, you'd damage the pearl because the drill would hit the pearl. And if you actually do manage to get in and take it out, the room like locks down, but also there's a button on the side of the door that if you press that button, the room stays locked for 10 minutes regardless.
Yeah.
So it's just like, okay, we know he's going to come at 12 o'clock to get it. We'll just hit the button before 12 o'clock and then it'll be locked down for 10 minutes and he won't be able to fucking do it.
I can't remember why they have to get out of there, but when they get out of there, he then basically, he dresses up as a blonde American woman. Spills a drink on Kazuha's...
He has a good American accented Japanese. Yes. I thought that was quite good.
Spills a drink on her dress. Offers to swap... Give her this dress she's carrying as a replacement.
I just bought this dress. I'm so fucking sorry. Please take this as repayment for me messing up your nice dress.
But what it actually do is go to the toilet with her, knock her out.
Dress as her, wearing the new dress.
Yes.
And he's all doing all this because he's noticed, hey, that boy fancies that girl. I can use this to steal the gem.
Yeah, I wrote down, what? Kid decides to use their teenage hormones against them.
Yeah, pretty much. Interesting fucking plan. okay. So he's dressed as her and doing all kinds of things, like squeezing into him. It's like, please be me. You know, it's like very much so emphasizing his... painted lipstick lips kind of thing, and was like, this guy's a weirdo.
Yes, he keeps on staring at her lips as well, even when she was that was when he noticed, that was when he got his plan, because he was like, oh no, I wasn't staring at, I was staring at something else.
And she's insistent that she thinks she has seaweed in her teeth.
That's it. Yes. that's the bit where I was like, oh yeah, they're clearly not a couple, because she's... And then there's other dialogue after that, yeah. And then it's Kaito Kid pretending to be her, says, yeah. Oh no, I left my phone in there. Can we go back and get my phone? And they're like, oh, are we not supposed to? And then that's where he, like, winds him up, his hormones some more, so they can sneak in. And then he fills it with smoke and ink.
There's some smoke grenades, basically, and also fill with ink. And he also drops a transparent tarp on top of the giant block of ice that the pearl is in.
And when they get this, when this all gets removed, it's revealed that the block of ice now has multiple ones of these rings in. And is one being pulled all the way out or just partially out?
There is a drill hole all the way in, like to the middle of the block of ice where the ring was before. Because all these rings are like higgly-piggly all over the place, but right in the center, there's a hole like already dug into where the ring presumably was, unless the ring is still in there and is one of those other ones, yeah.
Yeah, and that's where...
Also, when they went in and they pulled the tarp off, the tarp was covered in the ink, so it's clearly like some fucking David Blaine magic trickery fucking... But
that's Kid's thing. He's a magician.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very like a magician's reveal. I was like, oh yeah, that's why I like this character so much. is doing this stuff with magic. He's not just like a gentleman thief. He's a gentleman thief who uses magic tricks in his thing, which infuriates Shinichi. Shinichi doesn't get much to do as Conan in this. There's a bit where Kogoro thinks he can't read this headline because he's a kid, he can't read kanji, and he's shocked that he can.
There's a bit where Kid goes, yeah, I gotta watch out for that fucking brainy kid. Yeah. Which I thought was good. Is this like, yeah, people are aware of Conan at this stage.
I think he knows that he is Shinichi as well, because I'm sure they've doubled as each other in the past. But yeah, it's a good episode. Back to canon. Nothing really about the rum stuff from before. It was just shocking that it's still referring to stuff about the school trip, which was now like, it was January last year.
Yeah. As your man's coming in on the train wanting to kiss his girlfriend and damning his rival for kissing his own girlfriend, he's kind of thinking, it's like, yeah, the other day, and also that cop with the mustache is like, I came down the other day to check out this thing, and I was like, the other day, like fucking the months ago. Yes. All right, bud.
Yeah,
it just don't watch those episodes, because you don't need to. The show doesn't fucking care. Why should you?
Yes. And a lot of the time, it's just showing you repeats of old episodes remastered, which annoyingly we don't get on Crunchyroll.
Like, I'd be up for that more, sure.
Yeah, because it would fill in gaps of stuff I've not watched.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed this. I like the fact that it felt like here are a load of recurring characters' wants and needs.
Yeah.
And just set off against each other for this first episode. Yeah. And then we'll get into like the mystery of the ring next episode, of both the theft and the mystery of whatever this broker has done.
If I was more up on magic tricks, I'd probably be some way along on this, and I was like, I don't have a fucking clue what's going on.
I can't remember.
Was the air conditioner, I think?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
I'm guessing something to do with the ice kept cold or something like that.
I guess they're going to show you. I can't remember how they deal with Kaito's magic. Oh, God, hiccups now. Magic tricks. I got so excited about this episode. I've got hiccups. Moving on to Dragon Quest, Dai's Adventure. Is it? That's what it's called. Is that
the adventure?
The Great Adventure
of
Dai.
Yes.
Dai no Dai Boken.
Episode one. Yes. Dai, the tiny hero. I would have not have put my bet on as this being one of the best animated things this week, but turns out it is.
Here we are. Fine.
Oh, this is all pretty well put together. Oh, they put in some CGI monsters. I suppose they'd have the models for that. Yeah. And then it just goes like, ah, fuck you. I can do whatever. I can do fucking better than this partway through. Yeah.
I mean, it goes, that was really good. And then the stuff on the boat later on with that camera angle turn. And
that was class.
The 3D models are some of the best 3D models I've seen.
Yeah,
in modern anime.
Were the ones from like some other games or something like that? Because I was like, no, these are all the monsters as I remember them.
They look good. They don't always like go to compliment the anime models in the foreground sometimes. But hey, it's grand to go up, do a big crowd thing. Everything else is very bright and bouncy and fun. I don't really mind it.
Yeah, I really think the color design goes a long way to making those models gel with the whole thing.
I know it's based on a video game, but it's really like Sega Blue Skies going on in there. It's just a very intense blue in there that just pops out of the screen. Very saturated. So I suppose it's kind of like a Great Pretender in that regard, where it's just all the colors here and things are turned way up.
So this is based on a 1989 manga, I think, if that's the right date. And it's had an adaptation before. It was the second Dragon Quest anime. The first one, I guess, we don't talk of, because that's the one Toriyama had to sue Toei over for using his designs without crediting him. Maybe that's why they went with this one, where technically the designs have come from the comic. And it's about Dai, a young boy who's been raised on an island by monsters. And he wants to be a hero, even though his adoptive father, what type of monster is he?
He's a lump shaman.
Yes. I could remember what thing was.
He wants him to be a magic. He wants to be a sage. He wants him to be a sage, doesn't he?
Yeah, you're going to be hero support. You're not going to be the fucking hero kid. And so you're just saying that because you're hero support. Come on,
push your failed dreams on me, Dad. Too bad.
It like establishes like the hero already beat the evil bad guy, and we know this is the case in the world, and that's the stories that his grandpa raised him on. Whereas he wants to be the hero.
And then a bunch of heroes arrive at the island, and they're not quite the heroes that Dai thinks they are. They're a bunch of assholes.
Like, I did like the way the monsters were also, like the grandpa saying, is it's like, hey, we monsters are really happy with that because we were under the evil lord's thrall. So as soon as the hero defeated him, we were all fucking cool. We just all fucked off here to this island and lived peacefully forevermore. Which is nice. It's just like, yeah, it's just like, we're not really monsters, are just influenced by evil. But then you have other actual bad guys show up. It's like, hey, we're just going to come onto this island and kick some monster's ass and look fucking great doing it.
And they're all dressed in, like, I assume, standard class garb from the Dragon Quest games.
Yeah, you got your hero, you got your cleric, your mage, your barbarian, or you know, heavy dude. Yeah.
And
also after a golden metal slime, that's the most valuable one.
Which there is one. It's one of Dai's best friends. And they trick them and kidnap the slime and take it to a boat where there's a king. And the Lump Sage gives Dai some items to help him go and rescue them. The gulp gasp? Is that the thing?
Gulp and gasp. So it's a little tube and you can just aim it at something and just like if you go gulp, it'll like, you know, just absorb somebody into him. Yeah. It's like, oh really?
Gush and gulp, that's it. Yeah, I love how he's constantly sucking him in as he's trying to explain.
As he's trying to explain it.
And then he's like, right, that's Dad taken care of.
I'm gonna bring me a big golem monster. I'm gonna bring like a merman octopus. I'm gonna bring like a big ape and a tiger. Also got these two golden ones which Granddad gave me, which were monsters that render, but he doesn't know what's inside. They're probably very strong, so maybe.
I like the way the grandpa was like, oh, "Yeah, the evil lord gave me these to fuck up the hero, but obviously we're good now. I don't know what's in these ones, but they must be badass, so I'm not gonna fucking open them." And just like, yeah, here's these Pokeballs, and instantly puts his dad in a fucking Pokeball. Little bastard.
Turning it off and on again.
Beep, yeah, boop, yeah, 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 yeah. Very kid-like as well, though, to be fair. So yeah, he goes and storms the, I was going to say castle, but the boat. With his mates. And yeah, they're initially doing quite fucking well for themselves because you have an octopus and, or sorry, a squid and a merman just shaking the entire boat and giving a really fucking cool sequence while they're fighting a monster on a shaking boat.
The big rock golem is like smashing all the planking when he's big stomping around. He's throwing guys into the ocean. But those fake heroes, those bad heroes anyway, they're giving as good as they got because they can shoot fireballs. They got swords. They got like an ice spells and all that kind of jazz. So when Dai is one going at him as well, as one again, that's where they're kind of getting our cool sort of like fucking multi-angle, multi-plane doing there of Dai getting into this like really cool sword fight with the other sword fighting hero dude. But like, aha, if you got better back off, because if you make another move, we got a knife train and your precious little golden metal slime friend.
I do like the way it was the cleric was the most manipulative one, and also the one saying it's like, we're going to kill the prisoner kind of thing. I was like, some fucking cleric you are.
Yeah. I like the fact that King's body language throughout all this makes it clear that the king is not privy to their evil. He's
because even when they come back, it's like, my lord, we've come back from it. It's like, oh shit, is that island really full of monsters? He's like, yeah, we have to fight off 1,000 guys. When it's just like, your man called all his friends over and then they started brutally murdering them. And I was like, Jesus, that's really rough.
Yeah.
The king thinks it's like, wow, these guys are the real deal. He's not actually out for doing evil things. No. He just is looking for heroes, is the idea.
He's like, oh, once I realized they'd kidnapped somebody and saw them hold somebody hostage, I realized, yeah, they're not real heroes.
Kid, you showed up with your mates to help out a friend in need. You're a real hero.
Yeah. You summoned a dragon out of that one golden tube, and you summoned like a bunch of slimes out of the other tube, which actually was a king slime, all split up into multiple parts.
Mm-hmm.
Look at him, he's so proud, he's so big with his crown, his puffy cheeks. It's adorable.
And so he gives him a new hat as a future hero.
the hero's helm or something like that. And I was just like, oh, that's a good place to end it. Then it went 3 months later and I was like, oh, okay, we're doing this now. Some other, like a sage's ship has shown up.
Yes.
Looking for the hero, basically.
And it's good to take her off. Oh, the princess is here as well. Let us introduce you. It's like she swans down. She's like, oh, this vision of beauty coming off in a boat. It's like, you're the hero? Oh my God, you're so small. You're a tiny hero.
No, that's not very comforting. And he's like, what? So that's kind of where we ended, which is a funnier way to end it, for sure.
It is. I do like the sages giving up. Oh, you'll die the future hero. And Brass the Venerable. And Brass starts getting embarrassed about being called a venerable.
Remember my name?
Yeah, love this. It was
this was quite good.
Super fun, super bouncy. I think it was a little while ago now, but I had watched so much Magical Circle Guru and being immersed in, you know, it's very much even in this kind of game. It's like, it's like it got that back again. Oh, it looks just as good as true.
It does. Also, it feels like, oh, because I've never played a Dragon Quest game, but as I'm watching this, I was like, oh, this is what Guru Guru is parodying.
Yes, right. Because I was thinking, I played a few Dragon Quest ones. I never finished any of them. Too fucking long. It's kind of like, I guess it's kind of like a fair equivalent, maybe D&D, where it's just like, you know all the monsters, you know the basic setup, fucking go at it.
We've got it all lined up for you. It's very simply told, you know, about much like a Dragon Quest game is, because they're kind of reliably straightforward, and it's just about having fun in the moment. That's why it's so popular, why it's gone on for so long. Even if it's just a little bit, it's good to have all the spells that everyone called, like, you know, Fireball, to go like, Fizz, pow, zap, whoosh.
It's like sizzle sizzle is the small fire, and boom is the big fire spell.
Well, it goes like boom, and then it goes kaboom, and then it goes, you know, up and down as you learn stronger versions of it.
That's fine.
Having the team of monsters, that was there's some Dragon Quest games that are offshoots, which are just kind of like a Pokemon, like collect all the monsters and fight with them. But there was like a function of that in some of the games where you could have like a team of monsters on standby who you could kind of call in as backup in a fight if you needed them.
I remember that in Dragon Quest VIII, where you could get like two different teams of monsters, I think. And you could basically like progress by beating other teams of monsters in like a monster tournament. I was like, this is a fucking different game now, but I love it.
Yeah. And also the eye catches used at the spell of the week, like Guru as well.
Mm-hmm. Probably know that might have been from the original Dragon Quest, and that's what Guru Guru was taking it from.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to see you come full circle. It was emulating Dragon Quest, and what I was doing there, it's like some of its motifs are being touched upon again in this newer version of the Genuine article. Easy watch.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's an easy watch. Also, because I know it's one of these influential comics, and obviously not really much chance to read the comic, but it's nice to actually finally get a chance to see some of the story. Then let's all sit down as Niall tells us about Healing Good Pretty Cure, episode 26 to 27.
Okay, well, I won't keep it on because 26 was a clip show, so don't worry about that. They've accounted all the times and lost some fireworks. It's probably meant to air over the summer, but it's airing now, or aired a few weeks ago. So deal with it, it's fine. The other one then is, got the name of it, but it doesn't really matter.
Hot Air Balloon.
Hot Air Balloon.
Asumi and Latte's Passion.
That's it. They go to a hot air balloon competition, checking it out. And it's Nonoka's dad. It's the old like college group. Used to be a hot air balloonist club in college, I suppose. And this is like the current members of it. So it's kind of called cheering them on at the big hot air ballooning meetup, whatever. And this is where Asumi is kind of saying, oh, they're working very hard. What is this? It's like, they're very passionate about what they do. They want to put their all into it for hobby. Oh, it's just like love. It's kind of like love. Yeah. It's like you really love this particular activity. So you want to, like, you know, get that same feeling up. It's like, oh, I understand. So you kind of watch them and cheering them on. Again, some explanation about how you operate a hot air balloon. You know, you just kind of go up and down and try and catch whichever wind or air current you need to carry you towards the goal. You can drop your little target and get as close as you can to it. Also, why to do it early in the morning, because as the air heats up during as the sun heats the ground during the day, it creates air currents which can affect it. Yeah, interesting stuff. But no, they are not so successful in their first go at it. And then Asami and Ate is like, what's this tightness in my chest? Oh, you're probably feeling frustrated because you were cheering them on. You saw them work so hard, but it didn't come to anything. It's like, ah, oh, that's just it. But don't feel so bad about it. I mean, what Chiyu comes along eventually. So it's like, yeah, well, I feel frustrated sometimes and I don't do so well in the high jump. But what's important is that you get back up and try again because, you know, if it's something that you're so passionate about, it's worth doing your best and trying again, no matter what the result is. And if you really love it, you come back to it. Second go of it gets, of course, waylaid by monster activity. It's a hot air balloon, of course. Guaiwaro, the big musty dude, thinks he's some kind of super genius because he's in the evil lair. And he's like, okay, if you put like the dye into the water, it turns it like a dark color of the water. If you put even more dye into the water, it turns an even darker color. So, extrapolating from there, if I put more mega parts into the monster, it might make it bigger. I am a genius. It's a bigger hot air balloon, and they beat it, because, hey, you can't be coming on and spoiling everybody's hard work. Also, in second go, like, Asami was... had taken off one of their members who was, you know, fallen ill with anemia, whatever. But of course, hey, Asami, this is totally your deal because you are born of the wind itself, so you can actually kind of read air currents. You'd be really good at navigating and directing them towards the where they need to go, the balloon, and get a really good go to target. Yeah, cool. And so she feels part of it. She feels like she's contributed and she can understand a little bit better. But like, I see now this thing you humans call passion and drive and guts. Like, and I better believe it now. That's all fine. That's all nice. What comes at the end, though, is that Daruizen, he seems skulking around. So Nuriko goes out to investigate. It's like, I caught you right in the act. What are you up to doing hanging around here? Oh, just trying some stuff out with the mega parts here. So I can put it into this bird. I was planning on doing it. I can put it into Melanotis. But what if I put it into you, Cura Grace? Whoa, what? Oh, it thrusts it into her chest and she falls, doubles over in pain. It's like, this will be interesting. I'll come back and see what this does later. See ya. And she's on the ground. She's in a bad way. It's like, oh no, she's been affected herself by the very microbes, the very germs which have been trying to defeat. So next week it'll be a very serious medical drama as Nuriko is like laid up in hospital as her anxious parents are hovering by her bedside. They've been one of the worst fears of having, you know, they've already overcome one illness or disease that Nuriko had before. Now it's going to be some kind of relapse of that. You know, again, a very special episode of Healing Good Pretty Girl, looks like. Also a little note dropped in there when they're like, when the villains are discussing, you know, their plans or what they want to do with the monsters in the evil lair, Dorizon has asked Shindone, the female one, do you have any memories of your host at all? And say, no, I don't have memories of my host. I've always been me. I've always been inside this body. So it's like, so maybe these people we're seeing, they actually used to be people, and what's talking right now is the germ, the disease, the germs have taken full control of this host. And so... if you want to bring them over to our side, we'll have to expunge the disease from their body. And that's how you turn them more. That's how they do the face turn later on in the series. So it won't be about trying to terraform the Earth so that germ people and humans can live alongside side by side. But interesting nonetheless. So I was like, okay, sounds like we'll be getting a bit more in-depth of that next time by the looks of things. First of all, a very serious medical drama. It's a little bit of extra detail dropped in there at the end. Which keeps me intrigued, because it was otherwise kind of, it's nice, hot air ballooning. Yes, we learned a valuable lesson today. Actual continuity, actual progression in the story. This is what I'm missing for a little while now. So let's see where it goes.
Righty-ho. I think that's everything we saw. Anything we missed? Plenty more to come. I believe stuff has already come. As I was looking at the list, I was like, okay, I'll be watching that tonight after we finish up the podcast.
Yeah, it's yeah.
So
a certain returning show.
I watched the Awakakeru the sport climbing girls. That's a terrible translation because I was curious as to how horny it was going to be.
Curious, okay.
Not as horny as I thought it was going to be, but yeah, definitely horny. Yeah, I liked how they presented the wall climbing like a puzzle because that's what brings the main character into it. But I was just like, yeah, this is just an excuse to see muscular, sweaty girls climb a wall while pressing themselves into it. And I'm just like, how many angles can you do in that? Quite a few from the first episode. Maybe they've run out of them by now. Probably not.
Well, you can always keep going and find out where it goes. But yeah.
No,
that seems to be the primary draw of it. Straightforward. Besides,
I was like, it's not actually going to do it seriously. It's like it's just here for horniness, right? And I was like, yeah, pretty much. But and also, you know, here are four different types of personality of girl. Which one do you want to be your favorite character? That kind of thing. Yeah.
What are we? What are, any of us gets around to it or not? We also had this Burn the Witch film.
Yeah, I think it's because of the film. Like, I feel like you could do that as its own thing. Rather
yeah,
than
it's kind of separate. It's in three separate pieces. I did briefly check it out just to see whether they pronounced that lady's name, but apparently, from looking on Twitter, they never say her name, so it's still a mystery.
Dear.
As to how you say that name. So they need to do a sequel. As I said on Twitter, they should have a scene where various characters are trying to get her to say her own name because they're all too frightened to ask. They're all too embarrassed to ask.
They want to be rude. Yeah.
Or attempt to pronounce it and get it wrong. But yeah, I've got four more things possibly on the list for next week.
Yeah. So there's this Wandering Witch, The Journey of Elena. People have gotten in a bit of a froth over. It's got a witch with an enormous hat. Witch is with enormous hats in the demon. It seems very pretty and very sedate and laid back and relaxing, it seems. So.
That's why I wasn't interested. I'm not interested in sedate.
Exactly. I'll give it a look and see, you know, if its visuals are to be are as good as they say. I was kind of dubious of it because it must have been up on a preview or there was some kind of review embargo on it or something because it didn't come out in the state. I used to kind of around this time check to see when it's coming out again via wherever it said on the ANN preview guide. And this kind of these things kind of just kind of jumped in and along with that Inuyasha continued spin off thing they have up there as well. This kind it's spoken about on Friday, but we're getting them in now. Maybe just got them in late, but it starts glowing with praise, like fives across the board. So,
okay,
if everybody's feeling that way, I must give it a look then. But
there's a three. There's a three and a half there now.
yeah, it probably is very nice, but it could be a bit too slow for me, and probably a bit too slow for the purposes of this particular format of recording that we do. We need a good quotient of exciting things to happen in a given episode to kind of merit it. But we'll see. It's probably, I'd say, plenty to be keeping track of in the meantime. And if I get back to it, maybe in a few weeks, a few months, maybe even a few years from now, which would probably be the case.
Righty ho. Tuesday next week, Niall?
Tuesday, yes, correct. That'll be it.
And anything coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness?
We got our old pal Leon Everett, a mutual friend, come back. We're talking about Samurai Jack, the final, the last bit of it there, the 10-episode miniseries from 2017. That's because, I don't know, I just want to go back and finish it. I don't know.
I want to go back and finish it, kind of reminded by the new season of Primal coming, that kind of thing.
That's it, yes.
And that was the reminder, but it was just like, we ought to go back at that. And also, we haven't had a mod in a while, so it's a nice return.
Good enough excuse. Not we need an excuse to have our good pals on anytime.
Currently on Dynamite in the Brain, we've got up Tiger Mask episode where me and Bradley watch the first three episodes of Tiger Mask 1, 2, and W. And which I discovered that Bradley had not seen any of Double before.
Oh.
So,
That would surely be have more faces you recognize there.
Yeah,
of all of them.
Yeah. I mean, the other issue is, as I realized when he, as you'll hear his response, I realized maybe we should have done the first four episodes. But unfortunately, because I realized, I looked back in my Twitter comments on it, and I was like, oh, episode four is where it really hits its stride.
Is for the Red Death mask.
Yes,
Red Death mask.
That fight.
I mean, like, if that's not going to hook you into the show, nothing will. Yeah.
Just watch GIF of him. It's not a choke slam, but it's like the kind of the mandible claw kind of fucking slam. Mm. And you just get that shot as you have like Tiger Mask double. It's like you can see his eye peering out, going, what? And then a realization that he hits slams into the canvas. I just love that little bit of animation so much.
Mm.
Whereas actually, I think the first two series do a bit more with their first three episodes in terms of hooking you.
W gets you by four.
Mm. Yeah, man, I wish there was more of the original series in English. Mm. As we discovered, though, when we watched, I think the episode two we watched was subtitled in English but dubbed in Italian.
dear.
But violence translates into any language.
Mm-hmm. Is it a good Italian dub?
I don't know. I wouldn't know. I would not.
Do they emote well?
I can't remember. We recorded this episode many weeks ago.
You can't see your hands.
I see. Yeah.
And then coming up in on the 18th, we should have up a new episode of The Anime That Didn't Make Us. It'll just be me and Gary on that one, but we're recording another one this weekend when it'll be back to the usual three people. Not the usual three people, but there'll be three people on it again. So I've got that stuff to watch. Included an episode of something where apparently it's a rare case where not only is it not available in English, it's not available in Japanese.
Okay.
It's completely silent.
Well, there's a single episode available in Japanese, which is why somebody was able to fansub it into English recently. You can, however, find the full series in French and Korean. I think it's one of these lost anime. I couldn't find any more information about how it was lost and how it's managed to get lost as it aired in 1986.
That's a weird one, yeah.
It is a weird one, so listen for that. That'll be out in November. I've got a weird situation now where I'm going to have more episodes of Dynamite in the Brain recorded than I do have of The Anime That Didn't Make Us. It's going to throw me for a loop. But in that one's I'll be sitting on for a lot longer than the other one. Mm. But the general plan is the first Sunday we'll have Dynamite in the Brain out, and then the third Sunday we'll have The Anime That Didn't Make Us. And there may be some extras. Also, talking of extras, come to twitch.tv/letsgobrian on Monday night. That's Monday the 12th of October at 7 p.m. British summertime. Because I'm going to do a test transmission for Madstravaganza. I'm going to see if Madstravaganza will work running it through Twitch. Probably only for about half an hour or an hour. Just to see if things stream on the settings that I've got currently set up. And to see whether Twitch comes and takes it down because it doesn't like the sounds it's hearing.
That's the other problem. Yeah.
That is the other problem, yes. But I was convinced of it when I saw somebody I follow on Twitter like just airing episodes of the A-Team and Knight Rider last night. So I was like, on their Twitch.
I think it's okay in the moment, but if it's down as... if you save the video from watch later on,
yeah,
it might automatically mute seconds of it or pull it down altogether.
Yeah, it'll
but
be
at the moment it can't do a lot, I think.
Yeah, it'll be up within the moment. I know they can mute the sound because I've been on streams where they've got caught out and that's happened. But we'll see how that goes. That's Monday, 7 p.m. British summertime. And if that works, then probably sometime in December I'll do a full Madstravaganza.
Wait, Sunday or Monday?
Monday.
Monday, sorry, I thought you said Sunday the last time.
Maybe I did, but it's definitely Monday. Rightio, that's the end of the stream. Goodbye.
Bye.
Good night.